Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
This morning we shall start reading Canto 7, the last fairly short canto of Book 7. Last time we read about how Savitri had the experience of becoming a silent soul pervading silent space, and how her own being seemed to diminish smaller and smaller until she was simply a violet trace, unutterably effaced, vanished, no one and null, a vanishing vest like a violet trace, a faint record merely of a self now past. She was a point in the unknowable. And there was the feeling that she could be annulled completely. But that hasn't happened yet. And there's also the possibility that everything could return again. She might emerge as someone and redeem the world. So coming to the next canto, Canto 7, we return to the little hermitage. Will you read? Again, from the beginning of Canto 7.
The discovery of this cosmic spirit and the cosmic consciousness. In the little hermitage, in the forest heart, in the sunlight and the moonlight and the dark, the daily human life went plodding on, even as before, with its small unchanging words and its stare outward plodding of routine and happy quiet of ascetic peace. The old beauty smiled of the terrestrial scene. She too was her old gracious self to men. The ancient mother clutched her child to her breast, pressing her close in her environing arms, as if earth ever the same could forever keep. The living spirit embodied in her clasp, as if death were not there nor end nor change. Accustomed only to read outward signs, none saw aught new in her, none divined her state. They saw a person where was only God's vow, a still being or a mighty nothing. To all she was the same perfect Savitri, a greatness and a sweetness and a light, poured out from her upon her little room. Life showed to all the same familiar face. Her acts followed the old unaltered ground. She spoke the words that she was wont to speak and did the things that she had always done.
Thank you. Everything seems to be the same. The little hermitage, the daily human life just went plodding on just as before with all its small unchanging works and spare outward body of routine and happy quiet of ascetic peace. This is how Savitri has been living for months and months, no? All this whole time since she learned that Satyavan is doomed to die. She has started to find the solution to that. How can she live with? And it's all been happening in this little hermitage in the forest's heart. And she seems to be just the same, despite these tremendous experiences that she's had to everyone around her. She seems to be unchanged, just as she has always been. And there's this feeling that Mother Earth is holding on to her. The ancient mother clutched her child to her breast, pressing her close in her environing arms. The earth is holding on to her, as if earth could forever keep the living spirit and body in her clasp, as if death were not there, nor end, nor change. So all the people around her are just used to looking at the outward things. No? So nobody saw anything new or changed in her. They just see their dear familiar Savitri. They saw a person where was only God's vast, a still being or a mighty nothingness. Manoha, would you read on?
Her eyes looked out on Earth's unchanging face. Around her, souls, mutinous all moved as of old, vacant consciousness watched from within, empty of all but bare reality. There was no will behind the word and act, no thought formed in her brain to guide her speech. An impersonal emptiness walked and spoke in her, something perhaps unfelt, unseen, unknown, guarded the body for its future world. All nature moved in her whole stream of thought. Perhaps she bore, made conscious in her breast, the miraculous nature, origin of our souls, and source and sum of the vast world's event, the womb and grave of thought, the cipher of God, a zero circle of being's totality.
Thank you. It's as if Savitri herself doesn't know. There's just this experience of bare reality. So the body goes on doing what it has always done, speaking as it has always done. But there's no will behind the word or the act, no thought formed in her brain to guide the speech. So there's just this impersonal emptiness. The body's walking, speaking. She herself doesn't know. But it seems as if, perhaps, unfelt, unseen, unknown, something is keeping the body alive for its future work. Or perhaps it's just nature moving in her old, accustomed stream of force. But another alternative is that perhaps Savitri is carrying within her, made conscious in her breast, the miraculous nihil, the nothingness, the void, which is the origin of our souls, which is the source and sum of the vast world's events. It's the womb from which things are born, it's the grave which absorbs everything. It's a cipher, an emptiness of God, a zero circle of being's totality, an emptiness embracing everything. Yes, Don?
I don't understand nihil. Nihil means nothing.
Nihil means nothing, yes. Right. So it seems as if everything, the whole universe has emerged from nothingness. And perhaps this state of emptiness which she's experiencing now, she's carrying that nothingness within herself. And what is going to come out of it is not clear at all. But I'm sorry, Naren. Yeah. Yes.
It seems like that.
Yes. I think if you ask the scientists and the philosophers, many of them will tell you that it is like that. The whole universe seems to have emerged from an emptiness, a nothingness. Where it has come from, how it has come, what will happen to it, it will just maybe just melt back into that nothingness. So that's on a universal scale. But Savitri is feeling like this. On her own individual scale, she was asked to become nothing, you know. We read it last week or the week before. Fear not to be nothing, that thou mayest be all. So that's the experience that she's having. For the time being, she's experiencing the nothingness. But we will see, and we can tell from the title of the canto, that she's going to experience something much more positive, much more all-embracing, the cosmic consciousness.
Yes, but still I am puzzled by nihil being miraculous.
Sorry, Don.
Okay. I'm sorry.
And she would have used here, perhaps she were made conscious in her heart. Perhaps.
Yes, it says perhaps. It's unclear. He's describing her state. Yeah. All this is happening to her, and it's something amazing.
Subjective.
This is a subjective experience, yes. Can we go back to this line, a zero circle of being's totality. Mm. So, Danya, would you read?
What line?
I'm sorry, I don't have the line number, so come on. Line 39 on page 552.
It used her peace and actions in her acts. It was beauty in her lips, life in her breath, the original mystery over her human face. Thus was she lost within the separate self. Her mortal ego perished in God's mind. Only a body was left, the ego's self. A sea of dreams, washed by motionless sense, in a fear of unreal reality. An impersonal foresight could already see in the unthinking noise of the spirit. Even now, it seemed laying down in a riddle. The individual died, the cosmos passed. It is gone. The transcendental grew a myth, the Holy Ghost without the Father and Son, or a substratum of what once had been, being that never will to bear a word, restored to its original worldliness, impassive, soul, silent, intangible.
Thank you. So Savitri feels lost within to her separate, to any sense of separate self. Her mortal ego perished in this night, this darkness of God. So all that's left is a body, the shell, the outer shell of the ego self, of the individual self. And that shell is just floating like a shell in the ocean, afloat mid drift and foam of the world sea. And this sea, this world sea, is a sea of dream. As before, Savitri is observing it with a motionless sense, without anything moving. It presents itself to her in a figure of unreal reality. Just as I mentioned last week, Sri Aurobindo's experience after he'd had this first major spiritual realization. He saw everything like an unreal film passing before his motionless observation. For Savitri at this moment, a kind of impersonal foresight, she can look into the future and imagine or foresee that even now, it seems that the individual self can die, and in fact, the whole universe can die, can pass away. So these are two aspects of the divine, the individual and the universal. If these two pass away, if the individual is lost and the cosmic is lost, the transcendental, the supreme, seems to be something unreal too, a myth. If we put it in Christian terms, as Sri Aurobindo does here, it's the Holy Ghost without either the Father or the Son. This is the Christian Trinity, the transcendent, the cosmic, the individual. Or as a kind of substratum, a lower base somehow supporting this being, pure existence, that never willed to bear a world. It never wanted to become anything. It never wanted to create a cosmos. Now it's as if it would be given back, restored to its original state of empty loneliness, impassive, soul, silent, intangible, nothing to be touched or felt by the senses. Petra, would you read?
Yet all was not its this deep loss. The beam traveled not towards nothingness. There was some high, surpassing secrecy. And when she sat alone with Satyavan, her moveless mind with his that searched and strove, in the hush of the profound and intimate night, she turned to the face of a veiled, voiceless truth, hid in the dumb recesses of the heart, or waiting beyond the last peak climbed by thought, unseen itself, it sees the struggling world and prompts our quest, but cares not to be found. Out of the distant vast came a reply.
Thank you. When I read these lines, I always think of Sri Aurobindo's Gayatri Mantra, when he speaks of the Supreme Light, the Supreme Sun, waiting beyond the last peak climbed by thought. It's unseen itself, but it sees the struggling world, and it's prompting our search. It's calling to us to find it, but it doesn't make any effort to be found. It cares not to be found. But out of that distant vast, Savitri receives a reply. Please continue, Petra.
Something unknown, unreached, inscrutable, sent down the message of its bodiless light, cast lightning flashes of the thought, not ours, crossing the immobile silence of her mind. In its might of irresponsible sovereignty, it ceased on speech to give those flamings shape, made beat the heart of wisdom in a word, and spoke immortal things through mortal lips, or, listening to the sages of the woods, a question and an answer broke from her, high strange revealings impossible to men, something or someone secret and remote took hold of her body for his mystic use. Her mouth was seized to channel ineffable truths, knowledge unthinkable found in utterance. Astonished by a new enlightenment, invaded by a streak of the absolute, they marveled at her, for she seemed to know what they had only glimpsed at times afar.
Thank you. It's also a nice image of the gatherings in that clearing in the forest, where the sages of the wood gathered, and perhaps there were discussions, questions and answers. And then sometimes Savitri is not only listening, sometimes she speaks. And then when she speaks, they are amazed that this young woman is able to say these things. They marveled at her, for she seemed to know what they had only glimpsed at times afar. They had a distant glimpse of high truths. There suddenly she was expressing them clearly. Devan. What's this?
These thoughts were formed not in her listening brain. Her vacant heart was like a stringless harp. Impassive, the body claimed not its own voice, but let the luminous greatness through it pass. A dual power had beings uttered poles, still active, nameless and invisible. Her divine emptiness was their instrument. Inconscient nature dealt with the word it had made, and using still the body's instruments, slipped through the conscious void she had become. The superconscious mystery, through that void, mission its word to touch the thoughts of men.
Thank you. I'm going to pause here to look at this dual power. These thoughts are not formed in Savitri's brain or her heart. Her heart is like a stringless harp, and even the body, it doesn't claim its own material voice. It just lets this luminous greatness which she expresses just pass through. And this is happening because a dual power is still acting. It's nameless, it's invisible, and Savitri's divine emptiness is the instrument of that dual power. And now Sri Aurobindo is going to tell us what this dual power consists of. On one hand, there's inconscient nature, prakriti, inconscient nature, dealing with the world it has made and using still the body's instruments. And this, as if slips through this conscious emptiness, this void which Savitri has become. It uses the body's instruments and the superconscient mystery. On one hand, there's the inconscient nature, and on the other hand, there's the superconscient mystery also sends messages through that emptiness. It sends its word to touch the thoughts of men. Sri Aurobindo is expressing a lot in these few lines from line 94 to 100.
And this is something the Savitri and divine, his literature has come about.
One is inconscient nature, which is just running on. But beyond all that, there's this superconscient mystery of the Supreme, which is also using this emptiness to express itself.
No, what I'm saying is Sri Aurobindo's literature also comes in a similar way. When Sarthi was speaking to his dual power, Sri Aurobindo, I also think, is in the same way when he writes his literature.
In a way, it is the secret knowledge, the essence.
It's the essence, yes. Yeah. We should remember the title of this canto, no? The discovery of the cosmic spirit and the cosmic consciousness. So we're beginning to get a glimpse of this cosmic spirit which is taking possession of Savitri's being, her human being, but with all its great realizations now coming together. Hemlata, would you like to read?
As yet, this great influence is rare, but now the unmoving white picture space at which her minds arrived, tranquil and there, admitted a traveler from the cosmic thread. A thought came to tread as an outer voice. It called not for the weakness of the mind. It spoke not of the rushed, deceiving heart. It gave direct to the pure perception's seal, and only center now of consciousness. If center could be where all seemed only space, no more shut in my body's walls and gates, her being a circle without circumference, already now surpassed all cosmic bounds, and more spread into infinity. This being was its own ungodly world, a world without form or feature or circumstance. It had no ground, no wall, no roof of thought, yet saw itself and looked on all around. In a silence motionless and immutable, there was no person there, no centered mind, no seat of feeling on which beat events. All objects wrought and shaped reactions of stress. There was no motion in the inner world. All those are still and even infinity. In her, the unseen, the unknown, waited his power.
Thank you. This unmoving, wide, spiritual space in which Savitri's mind is still there, tranquil, bare, empty, accepts, allows a traveller to come in to her mind, a traveller from the cosmic breadths, from the widths, the eternal widths of the universe. A thought came through. You remember, all thought had stopped. All the thoughts had been barred. But now a thought is allowed to enter. It doesn't call to the mind. The thought comes through, expressing itself, draped as an outer voice. She hears it. It's not speaking to the mind. It's not speaking to the heart. It's expressing itself directly to the pure perception which she had become. Just this watching emptiness. That pure perception, says Sri Aurobindo, is now the only center of consciousness which is operating for Savitri. This pure perception, that's the only center now of consciousness. If there can be a center where everything seems to be only space, Savitri's own being is no longer shut in, limited by the walls of the body and the gates of the body. Her being has become a circle without a circumference. There's no limit to it. No? It's surpassing all cosmic bounds. It's beyond the limits of the universe. And it's spreading more and more into infinity. This being which she is was its own unbounded world, limitless, a world without form or feature or circumstance. It has no ground, no wall, no roof of thought, but it sees itself and it looks on all around in a silence, motionless and illimitable. There was no person there, no centered mind, no seat of feeling on which beat events or objects wrought and shaped reactions stress. There's nothing like that. There's no movement in this inner world. All was a still and even infinity. In her, the unseen, the unknown, waited his hour. Something is going to happen. Tuan.
But now she said that sleeping Satya, awake within, in the enormous night, surrounded her with the unknowable vast. The voice began to speak from her own heart that was not hers, yet mastered thought and sense. As it spoke, all changed within her and without. All was. All lived, she felt all being one. The world of unreality ceased to be. There was no more a universe built by mind, convicted as a structure or a sign. A spirit, a being saw created things and cast itself into unnumbered forms. And what was what it saw and made, all now became an evidence of one stupendous truth, the truth in which negation had no place, a being and a living consciousness, a stark and absolute reality. There, the unreal could not find a place. The sense of unreality was slain. There, all was conscious, made of the infinite, and all had the substance of eternity. Yet this was the same insufferable. It seemed to cast from it universe like a dream, vanishing forever into an original void. But this was no more some vague ubiquitous point, or a cipher of vastness in unreal naught. It was the same, but now no more seen far to the living flesh of the recovered soul. It was herself. It was the self of all. It was the reality of existing things. It was the consciousness of all that lived and felt and saw. It was timelessness and time. It was the bliss of formlessness and form. It was all love. And the one beloved's arms. It was sight and thought in one all-seeing mind. It was joy of being on the peaks of God.
Thank you. So this voice speaks from her heart. and changes everything. It's not the voice of her own heart, but it's speaking through the heart, and it is controlling thought and sense. And as it speaks, everything changed within her and outside. Instead of that unreal scene or that mystery, everything was, everything exists, everything lives. She feels the oneness of all being. This world of unreality ceased to be. There's no more a universe built by mind, what we experienced in Canto 13, a universe built by mind, which is just a structure, a sign. Instead, there's a living spirit, a being, saw all created things and pours itself into unnumbered forms and is what it saw and made. So everything which she can perceive, which the pure perception now perceives, becomes an evidence, a proof of one stupendous truth, a truth in which negation had no place. It's a being and a living consciousness, a stark and absolute reality, an utter reality. There, the unreal could not find a place, and that sense of unreality has been destroyed. In that reality, everything was conscious. Everything is made of the infinite. Everything had a substance of eternity. Patty, are you ready to read? I think we can read it again.
Line 163.
I think. Yes.
Yet this was the same indecipherable. It seemed to cast from it the universe like a dream, vanishing forever into an original void. But this was no more some vague, ubiquitous point, or a cipher of vastness, an unreal naught. It was the same, but now no more seemed far to the living clasp of her recovered soul. It was herself. It was the self of all. It was the reality of existing things. It was the consciousness of all that lived and felt and saw. It was timelessness and time. It was the bliss of formlessness and form. It was all love and the one end of its arms. It was sight and thought in one all-seeing mind. It was joy of being on the peaks of God.
Let's pause there. Anybody would like to ask or share anything about this passage?
What is the meaning, indecipherable?
Indecipherable. If somebody has very bad handwriting, like doctors often have very bad handwriting, they just do a kind of scribble that nobody can read. Indecipherable. Some mysterious message which can't be read. Yeah.
Sometimes
I think
they can read themselves.
Right, yes. So we can go on from line 163.
Ubiquitous.
That's a nice word. That means everywhere. Mm-hmm. Something is everywhere. So a point is usually something which even has no measurement. We can even feel that it doesn't exist. But this is a point that is everywhere, ubiquitous. Or a cipher, an empty zero. But this is completely different. It was the same, but now it no longer seems far away to the living clasp of her recovered soul that has really come back to her, her sense of having a soul.
Can cipher mean a number in general, or it always means...
Yes. No, it can mean ciphers. It can also mean code. No, Yes. But it can quite often be used like this. Mother uses in prayers and meditations, the word of Sifa as a nothingness, something that has no real existence. But of course, in mathematics, the cipher is something very useful. So she passed beyond time into eternity. Lyuba, 963.
She passed beyond time into eternity, slipped out of space and became the infinite. Her being rose into unreachable heights and found no end of its journey in the sand. It plunged into the unfathomable deeps and found no end to the silent mystery that held all world within one lonely place, yet harbored all creation's multitude. She was all vastness and one measureless point. She was a height beyond heights, a depth beyond depth. She lived in the everlasting and was all that harbors death and bears the willing hour. All countries were true in one true spirit, surpassing measure, change, and circumstance. An individual, one was cosmic self in the heart of the transcendence maker. And the secret of world personality was the creator and the lord of all. Mind was a single, innumerable loop upon her, himself, and all that he became. Life was his drum and the vast stage. The universe was his body, God its soul. All was one single immense reality. All its innumerable phenomena.
Thank you. Rani, will you read? It's line 186. Her spirit saw the world as living God. 187.
Her spirit saw the world as living God. It saw the One and knew that all was He. She knew Him as the absolute self-space, one with herself and ground of all things here, in which the world wanders seeking for the truth, guarded behind its face of ignorance. She followed Him through the march of endless time. All nature's happenings were events in her. The heartbeats of the cosmos were her own. All beings thought and felt and moved in her. She inhabited the vastness of the world. In distances were her nature's boundaries, its closeness, her own life's intimacies. Her mind became familiar with its mind. Its body was her body's larger frame, in which she lived and knew herself in it, one, multitudinous. She was a single being, yet all things. The world was her spirit's wide circumference. The thoughts of others were her intimate, their feelings close to her universal heart, their bodies, her many bodies, kin to her. She was no more herself.
Thank you. Sonia.
Out of the infinite truths all came to her. Into the infinite sentient, she spread. Infinity was her own natural home. Nowhere she felt, spirit was everywhere. The distance, constellations wheeled around her. Earth saw her born. All worlds were her colonies. The greater worlds of life and mind were hers. All nature, he produced her in its lines. Movements were large copies of her own. She was the single self of all this self. She was in them, and they were all in her. His first was an immense identity, in which her own identity was lost. What seemed herself was an image of the whole. She was a subconscious life of tree and flower, the outbreak of honeyed buds of spring. She burned in the passion and the splendor of the rose. She was the red heart of the passion flower, the green white of the lotus in its pool. Out of the subconscious life, she climbed to mind. She was thought and the passion of the world's heart. She was the Godhead, hid in the heart of man. She was the climbing of his soul to the cosmos, flower tinker. She was its bed. She was time and the dreams of God's time. She was space and the whiteness of her days.
His days.
Of his days. From this she rose, where time and space were not. Superconscious was her naked air. Infinity was her movement, natural space. Eternity looked out from her on time.
Thank you. Sri Aurobindo expressing the inexpressible. This is the end of Book 7. Book 7. And it's, we can say it, marks the close of Savitri's preparation for facing the death of Satyavan. The next canto is, the next book is the book of death. So we have seen her being prepared from the beginning of the canto of Canto 7. Yes.
Go a little bit more in this part of 177.
This is in the same canto?
Yes.
What line is it?
5, 5, 6 page and then 177.
Yes.
And life of his arm is a vast estate. The universe was his body, God's his soul.
Yes, this all contraries were true. Huge spirit. This must be cosmic consciousness. The cosmic spirit. That's the theme. The cosmic spirit and the cosmic consciousness. So she experiences that all contraries, all things that seem to be oppositions and contradictions, but they're all true in this one huge spirit, which is beyond measurement, beyond change, unaffected by any circumstance. She experiences that one individual, an individual united with the cosmic, was the creator and the Lord of all. One individual in the heart of the transcendence miracle and the secret of world personality was the creator and the Lord of all. Yes. Yes. So here we've got mind, life, and body, the universe was his body, God its soul, all was one single immense reality. And all in this cosmos were its innumerable phenomena, all the expressions of that one.
I think in these two lines we have really sense.
Which two lines?
This one, as spirit, so the world as living God.
Yes.
When we talk about the divine,
yeah.
this is it. So the one and knew that all this is.
Yes.
This is God, this is divine.
Yes. And then the next two. And she knew this living God as the absolute self-space of the Supreme. And he's one with, united with herself. And he's the ground, the basis, the foundation for all things here in our world. So she's able in that consciousness, through the march of endless time, a vision of the whole past of the universe. And everything that happens in nature, she experiences as events in her own consciousness. The heartbeats of the cosmos, of the universe, these are her own heartbeats. She's aware of all beings thinking and feeling and moving in her. Sri Aurobindo has written, I think, 2 or 3 sonnets on this theme, on this experience. We can read this again and again.
So there is only one word which pops up in my mind when I experience this, oneness.
Oneness, yes. Yes.
The one and the many.
The one being the many.
Yes, or the one and
undivided.
Inseparably separable.
I think of the Ishwara and Shakti.
Yes.
Coming together. But she, in a sense, she's realizing her true self, or even the Divine Mother, which is one with the Ishwara.
Yes.
Coming into her own.
We still have some time. If you like, I would read this last section.
It's interesting because in my version, it says Canto 7, and there is no title.
Right, yes.
And it says that no title is given by you.
Yes, but that's turned out to be wrong. When they were doing this final checking for this 1993 edition, there they found the page with the cosmic spirit and the cosmic consciousness in Sri Aurobindo's own handwriting. It had just been missed. So we're very happy that it's found and it has come back. Yes, it is. In a way, it's a vindication of this 1993 edition, which has been so much criticized. But just the fact that they found this title really justifies all that careful work that was done in the Sri Aurobindo archives for this edition. Sorry? Shall I just read the last section?
Yes, sir.
So then I'm going to start on page 554 at line 130. 130. A voice began to speak from her own heart, that was not hers, yet mastered thought and sense. As it spoke, all changed within her and without. All was, all lived. She felt all being one. The world of unreality ceased to be. There was no more a universe built by mind, convicted as a structure or a sign, a spirit, a being, saw created things and cast itself into unnumbered forms and was what it saw and made. All now became an evidence of one stupendous truth, a truth in which negation had no place, a being and a living consciousness, a stark and absolute reality. There the unreal could not find a place. The sense of unreality was slain. There all was conscious, made of the infinite. All had a substance of eternity. Yet this was the same indecipherable. It seemed to cast from it universe like a dream, vanishing forever into an original void. But this was no more some vague, ubiquitous point or a cipher of vastness in unreal naught. It was the same, but now no more seemed far to the living class of her recovered soul. It was herself. It was the self of all. It was the reality of existing things. It was the consciousness of all that lived and felt and saw. It was timelessness and time. It was the bliss of formlessness and form. It was all love and the one beloved's arms. It was sight and thought in one all-seeing mind. It was joy of being on the peaks of God. She passed beyond time into eternity, slipped out of space, and became the infinite. Her being rose into unreachable heights and found no end of its journey in the self. It plunged into the unfathomable deeps and found no end to the silent mystery that held all world within one lonely breast, yet harbored all creation's multitudes. She was all vastness and one measureless point. She was a height beyond heights, a depth beyond depths. She lived in the everlasting and was all that harbors death and bears the wheeling hours. All contraries were true in one huge spirit, surpassing measure, change, and circumstance. An individual, one with cosmic self, in the heart of the transcendence miracle and the secret of world personality, was the creator and the Lord of all. Mine was a single, innumerable look upon himself and all that he became. Life was his drama and the vast a stage. The universe was his body, God its soul. All was one single, immense reality, all its innumerable phenomenon. Her spirit saw the world as living God. It saw the one and knew that all was he. She knew him as the absolute's self-space, one with herself and ground of all things here, in which the world wanders, seeking for the truth guarded behind its face of ignorance. She followed him through the march of endless time. All nature's happenings were events in her. The heartbeats of the cosmos were her own. All beings thought and felt and moved in her. She inhabited the vastness of the world. Its distances were her nature's boundaries, its closenesses, her own life's intimacies. Her mind became familiar with its mind. Its body was her body's larger frame in which she lived and knew herself in it, one multitudinous in its multitudes. She was a single being, yet all things. The world was her spirit's wide circumference. The thoughts of others were her intimates, their feelings close to her universal heart, their bodies, her many bodies, kin to her. She was no more herself, but all the world. Out of the infinitudes, all came to her. Into the infinitudes, sentient, she spread. Infinity was her own natural home. Nowhere she dwelt. Her spirit was everywhere. The distant constellations wheeled round her. Earth saw her born. All worlds were her colonies. The greater worlds of life and mind were hers. All nature reproduced her in its lines. Its movements were large copies of her own. She was the single self of all these selves. She was in them, and they were all in her. This first was an immense identity in which her own identity was lost. What seemed herself was an image of the whole. She was a subconscient life of tree and flower, the outbreak of the honeyed buds of spring. She burned in the passion and splendor of the rose. She was the red heart of the passion flower, the dream white of the lotus in its pool. Out of subconscious life, she climbed to mine. She was thought and the passion of the world's heart. She was the Godhead hid in the heart of man. She was the climbing of his soul to God. The cosmos flowered in her. She was its bed. She was time and the dreams of God in time. She was space and the wideness of his days. From this, she rose where time and space were not. The superconscient was her native air. Infinity was her movement's natural space. Eternity looked out from her on time. Thanks to Sri Aurobindo.